1 2 1 2, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, man.
All right.
Yeah, no, what was it? I guess while we're waiting for Nicholas, if hopefully he'll show up. But oh man, I was watching several farming documentaries regarding the agriculture industry, just overall. So it's definitely I'll be honest with you, it's really hard to get perspective of the complexity of just the overall the industry. So it, you know, from like back in the old days when, you know, it's crazy how just the invention of the plow machine made all the difference up until as of late, you know, like with the whole vertical farming and modern day technology, like where they use drones to get more to scan the fields to see the accuracy of, like, you know, how they maximize the you know, the cover of each crop and yield. You know, it just, yeah, I don't know how anybody, I mean, you'd have to really spend time, like, years in this field just to really get your head wrapped around it.
Yeah, I think they made farming into a Frankenstein.
You think so?
Post World War II. Yeah, they perverted it into something that occurs naturally, into something that requires a ridiculous amount of manipulation by technology. And we need to get away from that.
I think getting away from pesticides would be a good start.
Yeah. Pesticides, synthetic nutrients, everything. It's all post World War II consumerism, in my opinion. Basically you can't survive unless you buy our products, which is bullshit. Then how did everyone do it for thousands of years prior to that, if that's the case?
Right. You remember I think it was back in the early 2000s, like the whole Monsanto case, you know, with GMOs.
Yes. Oh, I'm very, very aware of that.
Oh my God. I mean, how they were able to, what was it? Like when the seeds like blew off like trucks and crop and from their fields into other farmers' crops. I mean, it would cause so much. It would cause them to lose millions because it's like their fields been contaminated with Monsanto seeds. On top of that, there was like a they'll remember it. What was it? They have a copyright on their, like a copyright or some kind of. I don't know if it's a copyright.
Yeah, it would be a patent on the specific GMOs.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's a patent, and they wouldn't be able to sell their crop because it's all contaminated. So they have to like burn their entire field, start over, lose money, or you know, have a bunch of attorneys or thugs show up their doorsteps. You know, either coercing them to use their seeds, or they'll purposely contaminate their fields.
Yeah, so that's what the goal was to shut down all of their farms. They were purposely spreading the pollen from their seeds. It was mostly like beans and legumes, and they purposely spread the pollen and then go after these people and say, hey, you're growing our patented genetics. We're going to sue you. So what it was a tactic to shut down the competition. They knew exactly what they were doing, and yeah, they were very successful at it. Yeah, they're terrible. And, you know, the other side of the coin is, too, is those farmers did not want those genetics in their crops. Like, they see GMO as inferior. So it's not like it's helping them to be growing GMO.
But so I think the original idea behind GMO was to help maximize yield in any type of environment. Just FYI, To anybody listening on this, we are still waiting on our guest. We're going to give him about like 5 or 10 more minutes to respond. And if he doesn't show up, we'll probably reschedule, shut this one down, and start over. So anyways, sorry, I just want to make that announcement out there. But anyways, yeah, we'll catch that in a way. But yeah, no, what was it? I think that was the original purpose of GMOs. I mean, there have been like so many like case studies and like, I remember, what was it? I think it was France. They have a much more stricter food guideline. And somehow, like, somehow they managed to go ahead and ban like Monsanto's GMOs because they try to get into the European markets. And, you know, for whatever reason, they lobbied real hard through the U.S. Court system. And even in Canada, which is crazy. Do you know they have that milk cartel?
Oh, what did you say?
Canada has a milk cartel.
I would believe it. Most major industries are owned by lobbyists, particularly food. U.S. is really, really bad. Like, there are certain foods that are sold here that are illegal in Europe. Just to put perspective into how much we, in my opinion, don't care about our citizens. It's just it's all about profit and creating monopolies, but they don't call them monopolies because,
right. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to get your head wrapped around. I mean, I think the other side effect is that you have too many Americans across the country that aren't. I mean, this could be twofold because, I mean, food is it's economic, it's environmental, it's political, all packaged into one thing. And what you end up with is, you know, and you're trying to diagnose such a big problem, you know, to really get down to the core of the issues. I mean, you can start off with, like, you know, how people, one, how they interact with the political system, and two, you know, where do they start learning about it and at what age? You know, because it's like by the time they get out into the real world, it's like maybe they haven't been exposed to learning how the political system works. But even if they were educated by, whether it be like through parents or their local school institutions, like, is even inaccurate because the politics of agriculture and how things are lobbied, there's so much minutia. I mean, I'm very cautious to say corruption because it's like corrupt from what? I mean, like, there's lobbying has its lobbying. I mean, I want to be careful how I say this. How the intent of the lobby for specific legislations more than often always puts profit before people. God, I sound like a socialist, don't I?
Yeah, but you're just speaking the truth. Right. Lobbyists, like we were just saying, I think lobbyists, their goal is to monopolize specific industries as much as possible.
Right.
And it's people who are typically already very rich, or corporations who are already very rich, that just want to have more and more control.
Right.
You know, that seems to be the end result. And those are the things that we don't learn in school about politics, right? Like, we're taught the Constitution. We're kind of misled. I don't think necessarily intentionally into thinking that, oh, these people have our best interests in mind. No, they have their own best interests in mind, which is profit margin, you know, and
yeah.
I think a lot of us often fall victim to that and give those institutions a little bit too much of a benefit of the doubt, right?
We have Elon Musk. What?
Well, if this is the real Elon Musk, I am absolutely flattered you are here.
That is crazy. What was it?
And you should probably be doing something more important than this, given your intelligence level.
I don't know, man. Food is a big deal. But again, another quick reminder to everybody, we are still waiting on our guest. I mean, we're in the middle of a really good, interesting conversation, even without him. But again, like, we'll probably shut this space down here the next few minutes. I don't know. Like, yeah, we'll probably shut it down in the next few minutes. We'll reconvene and get this rescheduled at a later time. But that being said, anyways, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. No, not so much as the lobbying. It's really so much as, like, okay, we have the, because I was looking into this, the Department of Agriculture, right? And I think that's where you cut the head off, the head of the snake right there. Because, like, I mean, at what point, I mean, you end up with the government so bloated, it gets to the point where it's so difficult to navigate, where it influences, state and local governments, how certain people aren't able to sell their own crop, like individuals, like actual individuals, when you turn your home into a little farm or an agriculture hub, you try to sell it. So city locals, police enforcement will come in and saying, hey, you're violating certain city codes, not able to sell. Or there have been stories like in California, where you have people raising chickens in their backyard, where the city will come in and say, hey, we'll need to destroy your chickens, like all of it. I don't even know how it came down to that. And then you fast forward to today, we hear, like, I would say, like, around just after the shutdown into the new administration, we're hearing situations like farms being destroyed, trains being derailed, now a bridge collapsed. All these infrastructures that where our food is being transported from point A to point B. And I start to wonder, like, could this food on Luna Classic could it be the simplest solution to the biggest problem? Not to say that's a one size fits all, but could it really solve this, all these compounding problems that we're seeing, like, day to day, weekly, monthly? Or am I getting ahead of myself?
No, I think that problem's already been solved. But again, at the legislative level, there's very obvious efforts to, again, monopolize things. I think the Amish are a good example of someone who's been persecuted for just trying to grow food and sell it to people. You mentioned the milk cartel thing. They really seem to go after anybody who sells unpasteurized milk. I don't know if they really genuinely think it's actually dangerous, or if it's trying to control a market, which is what I would suspect. So I think the solution's already there. Obviously, it's more logical to grow food close to where it's being sold.
Yeah.
If you're worried about carbon footprint and all that, shipping it 3,000 miles from California just to eat a tomato really doesn't make any sense, when you could probably grow it, where much closer where it's from. Using, even in the winter, if you have in the ground greenhouses, you can actually keep your grow area at a steady 70 degrees, even in northern climates. So the food can be produced relatively cheap locally year round. There might be some exceptions to that, but in general, it can be achieved. And, another example of why you want to eat local, like, for instance, local honey, that will build your resistance to allergies, because you're consuming, the product of a pollinator who survived off local pollens. So, getting your honey from 1,000 miles away, like my local gas station, they have complimentary honey in little packets. It's from, I think, Pennsylvania. So obviously, here in Massachusetts, we're not getting the correct allergy resistances like we should be. So, the whole industrial food complex, I guess you could call it, I just made that up, is really counterintuitive for your health as well.
Right. Now, what was it, honey, like they say, like, you're, and you probably already know this as well, like, when you get honey, like, how it cures your sinuses, it's typically within a 50 to 100 mile radius of your specific location. And it's crazy how the honey in certain regions, so say, like, if you're, like, in Oklahoma, for example, like, the honey there will build your immunity to that specified region, specified pollen within that specific region. If you go, like, maybe 100 miles outside of that, like 3 hours south of that, like into Texas or maybe to Austin, like, your body doesn't recognize the the pollen there, so you're just going to get all jacked up because the bees aren't using that, or using a completely different pollen from where you were accustomed to versus to where you are now. And it's crazy how I wish I would have learned this much more when I was a kid. You know, it's just, I mean, I'm grateful for being able to have the access to this, to information that's more readily available, like, you know, the internet as it is today. Well, I mean, that's kind of a double-edged blade, so I got to be careful how I phrase that. Yeah, all things considered. But, you know, I think we're at a precipice. I mean, how crazy would it be if Food Token itself disrupted an entire industry at a global scale?
That's going to, if it gets big enough, if they make a loud enough bang, that will eventually become an issue. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily been done on Web3, but, you know, these local agriculture movements have occurred many, many times, and there's typically resistance once it gets big enough to step on the toes of people who have control, right? I'm really into regenerative agriculture. There's a guy, I think his name's Young Sang Cho from Korea. He started a method called Jadam, which I love. It's super, super low cost, high quality food. And he's received threats from senators. He wouldn't say who. It was actually a prominent senator's wife called him and basically said, if you keep pushing this, you're going to end up dead, because it was taking money out of the pockets of so many lobbyists and so many powerful people that, yeah, he got death threats. So these sort of things do happen as far as these natural agriculture movements, and they are very often threatened by those who run these industries. They do not want to let go of their power, and they're not going to do so without a fight.
I'm wondering, like, it being a decentralized project, just as it is, I mean, it would be them just shooting through the clouds, hoping something will stick. You know, you get this cloud of ideas that's already in execution. Like, who are you going to target? Are you going to target, like, each individual and intimidate in courts? Like, big entities with a huge stake in the industry. They're going to protect their personal interests. The question is like, you know, what kinds of mechanisms can you put in place where you can push back against these, you know, these companies or other individuals that use a what's the word I'm looking for? Not just coercive, but kind of like a thug, like, you know, kind of like the Italian mob. Yeah, where they come by, knock on the door, pay me, or for protection or something like that kind of approach.
I think the first tactic you see is lawfare. You know, they would go after, like in this case, they'd probably try to go after Nicholas for starting a crypto, you know, SEC or whoever, and right, get that lawfare tactic and just intimidate them. You know, I want $10 million, whether it makes sense or not, and they'll probably lose in court because it's an absurd number. That's a pretty scary thing to hear as somebody who's just starting a small project, right?
Right.
But yeah, that's the tactic I would suspect is lawfare. We see that a lot nowadays, yeah. Right?
Right.
It starts there, and if you win, then there's appeals, and, you know, things ramp up. We see specific people, and I'm not going to say any names because I don't want to get into a political discussion, but we see certain people aren't treated fairly, and other people are pretty much exempt from the laws that they break. So it all depends on who your friends are and what your affiliations are. You either, you know, get beaten down or you get away with more than you should. And that's a huge problem across the board, at least in America. It's probably other places, but I don't pay attention to the politics anywhere else. We're certainly seeing it now. There's a multiple tier justice system. And I think that's what we would see happen with, you know, the agricultural movement too. And I, there's a lot of evidence to support that, again, like the Amish being an example. That's what's happened in the past, is you basically get raided and sent to court, and you know, a lot of these people can't afford to actually do what is necessary to defend themselves. Hey, it's Nicholas.
Oh, Jesus. We only like started the conversation without, we're actually can.
All right. It's good to have you here, man. I was getting worried.
What's going on, guys? Well, yeah, we did have like a crazy windstorm overnight, and we had some issues with the farm. So we're a little on the sprint side this morning, and I was not able to join you guys. But I'm here now.
Well, yeah, it's good to have you. I hope everything's okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you very much for having me, guys. Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry for being so late. So yeah, should we just go ahead and start talking about Food Token or what? Where you guys at here?
We got to kick it off with our intros first, and then we can hop right in. Does it sound good, PSX? PSX, if you're there, I can't hear you, buddy. I hope we didn't lose him. Yeah, he was just talking, so I don't know what's going on.
So how you doing, Ness? Everything's good?
Good. Yeah. We were just talking about you know, some of the political issues around food, in general, you know, like,
it's funny you say that. I was talking about that yesterday with some clients.
Yeah. Like in the U.S., like the Amish here, deal with a lot of issues and local farmers, with like the FBI will just show up and tell them they can't, you know, sell certain foods anymore. Like pasteurized milk is a very common target, unpasteurized milk, I should say, here for some reason.
Yeah, we have those problems here in Canada as well. It's very, very regulated.
Yeah. And we all know why and what the intentions are there. The big boys don't want to let go of their money is what that is.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, there we are.
Right. Yeah, that was crazy, dude. Like, I just like, man, it's been, Twitter's been wild today.
Really? Yeah, what's been going on? Anything special?
Yeah, well, we were actually about to shut it down because we're like, we're 30 minutes past.
I know, man. I know.
Yeah. So, man, let's see. I mean, we were kind of going into a kind of down a rabbit hole here not so long ago, but we don't have too long. Let's try to.
Dude, I'm going to wrap it up. We're going to talk about this stuff. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining, and people are going to listen after. It's going to be perfect.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Do the disclaimer at least.
Yeah, go ahead and do a disclaimer. At least do that before we get going.
All right, a quick disclaimer. This podcast should not be considered financial advice. The contents of this broadcast here and or on any other platforms are for educational and entertainment purposes only and cite our own personal opinions. In order to make the best financial decision that suits your needs, please conduct your own research and seek the advice from a licensed financial advisor. If necessary.
Okay, man, got a lot to cover, a lot of things that I want to hit. You know, as a saying, like, let food be thy medicine, Hippocrates. Yep. You know, even earlier today when Ness and I were talking. And I do need to make a quick announcement. Jerry is still out. I think he should be back by the next episode whenever we get that scheduled, but his kid is has been in a bit of a medical pickle. It's nothing, I don't want to say it's too seriously, but it's bad enough to where it definitely needs to, it's gotten his attention. So we're praying, we're hoping things will resolve itself ASAP. So that way we can get things back to normal. But that's just an FYI. So if you guys can take some time to send your thoughts and prayers to him, that would be greatly appreciated. So anyways, back to us now. Nick, farming.
Yeah.
You're in the classic. Gee, I was like, I got so thrown off for a little bit with all these little interruptions and hiccups and kinks, and it's just like, shit, I gotta get myself back on track. Welcome to episode 38. I know we're getting off to a really late start, but fuck it, let's just go with the flow, you know.
Heck yeah, it's a weekend, it's Easter,
right? Yeah, no working, except we are kind of working, but we're not.
Moving all good.
Do what we love, so it doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yes. So how's your day? How's your morning? Did you
get your coffee? Good. We had some crazy winds yesterday. We had a bunch of stuff kind of fly away, and the animals were a little bit crazy. We had some no eggs, and then we had some clients come through, and it was just kind of like a little hectic morning. But I'm here, and I'm here with you guys. It's kind of like I'm living the farm life while I'm building this project on Luna Classic. You know, I'm learning a lot along the way as well, because I started farming in 2019. Okay, so I was before all this, you know, we've talked some Ness and guys, but you know, I used to do football. I even went to college and I studied finance. I knew nothing about farming when I started all this stuff. So when I retired from football in 2019, I got into this farming ideology and stuff, and I had a completely external ideology of it, right? Because I was not like influenced by, you know, traditional teachings and stuff. So I just kind of started doing my own research, and I started looking at videos and reading books. And you know, I'll be very honest, my best coach, my best teacher, and always will and always has been YouTube. You know, there's people that share 15 years of knowledge, of mistakes, of hardships, of like all these mistakes that they did along the way. They share it in 15 minutes, and you don't have to make all those mistakes. So like, I got to say, I learned a lot from YouTube, but it's also what got me into this. So my first year, we did a very traditional garden, you know, that's a permaculture garden. So I rented a little, it takes the grass. It just takes like 1 inch of grass off the grass. So I took all the grass off this area, and I made these nice little 32-inch wide mounds that were about 20 feet long, and I had 18 of them. And we had this little, we bought this little irrigation system, drip by drip. And this thing was like, it was pretty legit. It looked really, really freaking cool. But at the same time, you know, you got the hose running across the driveway. You got cars driving on it. You got all these, you know, sometimes you forget to turn it off and now you flood your garden. And you're like, dang it. And so that was the summer. I also decided to make my first hugelkultur mat. So for those who don't know, hugelkultur is a permaculture concept that pretty much allows you to grow water without any, grow food without any water, you know, anywhere around the world. I learned from a girl that was doing it in South California, and I taught my friend in Africa, in Cotonou, Africa, to do it. And we just financed through Food Token another friend in Uganda this week on Thursday. So he is building his hugelkultur garden in Uganda to feed his community. So that was kind of like the idea behind Food Token. But to come back to that, to my story here, so our first year, we had a little tiny mound that was like 4 feet by 10 feet. And this thing was producing more than like our garden. We had spent hours and hours and hours in work and sweat and blood and tears to get ready and money, a lot of money, you know, the irrigation system. It was like 1,800 square feet garden, you know, and the irrigation system was about $1,500, $1,600. And that's not even counting all the water you're using up. Like I did the math. It was about, you know, the it's about 9 gallons an hour. So let's say you have about half of the days of the summer that you water your garden, you know, that would be about 90 days, and 90 days times 9 is 81. So it's about, you know, almost close to 1,000 gallons of water during the summer that would go into that garden, you know. And once again, it was one of those drought summers. It was super hot, and right next to my garden, I have this little hugelkultur mound that's giving me 2 to 3 times the growth, the harvest. Everything looks alive and well and green, and there's flowers everywhere. And I'm like, why are we doing this traditional farming method? So I decided to do a large scale garden of this hugelkultur concept. So I took about 1/2 acre. And we did this cool, we mixed in a couple concepts, okay? So if you go to our Telegram page and stuff, I made this little, it's like a cheat book. It's like your permaculture cheat book where I mix and match about 7 different concepts of permaculture all together. And it just gives you this ultimate, like, waterless, compostless, freaking, you don't need anything pretty much. You just plant and go. You know, you have no weeding, no tilling, no pesticides needed, no fertilizer, nothing. You know, you can do this anywhere around the world. And you know, that's why I say, why do people have grass in their front yard? You know, that's the, you know, we were talking earlier about the access to food and all this stuff. I'm like, I'm like, why would you have a front yard made out of grass when you can have this little agriculture amount that's going to provide for your whole family, you know, like a lot of food. And not only that, so these little agriculture mounds, they last 25 years. Like, it's not like you do, you know, it's got a couple of years and then whatever, because the agriculture concept is you dig a hole and you fill it up with wood. That simple, okay? And then you grab your dirt and you throw it back on top. So it's going to give you a little mountain. But the wood that you threw into the ground is your food, is your compost for the next 25 years. So the mycorrhizae, all the little insects and stuff, they decompose it and they turn it into nutrients. Okay. And at the same time, all that wood, they act as sponges. So they soak up the water, the humidity into the soil. And when it gets really, really, really hot, they transpire. It transpire all that humidity into the dirt. But we prevent it from evaporating with another concept called the root stout method. So the root stout method, pretty much, once again, long story short, add hay, straw, or wood chip on top of your dirt, on top of your little mountain. So what that will do is will prevent evaporation of your soil. It will protect your compost and your topsoil from the sun, giving an area where insects can do their work, all the little ants, all the little worms and stuff. So they do all the tilling for you. They do all your topsoil work. They do all this stuff. And by adding all this topsoil cover as well, what you're doing is you're preventing weeds to grow. So you don't have to do any weeding. You don't have to do all this crazy stuff. And what's good about this topsoil cover that you add on top of your mountain is that it decomposes. So depending on the matter that you put, you know, like straw is about in a year's time. So if you put in a year, within a year, like your straw is now compost. It's really unbelievable. So you build up your soil from the top with this root stout method and from the bottom with the agriculture concept. And after that, we mix in companion farming and all factory barriers and electroculture and stuff like that. So we can talk for a long, long, long time. But the idea is I came up with this concept that was like revolutionary. And we're talking about, you know, government reach and I was like, how can I get this concept the fastest way out into the world without being, you know, blocked or muted or this and that? And for a long time, it took me a while to realize what was going to be my plan of action. But I knew somehow it was going to be through Luna Classic, you know, because it's the people's blockchain. You know, you can send money across the world. And I did it. I sent it to Uganda. It took me 7 seconds. It cost me 2 pennies, you know, like. It's unbelievable. There's no other service that offers that right now in the world. Like Interac, PayPal, whatever it is, you're going to be paying a couple dollars per transaction. You're not paying pennies. And it's not that fast. And it's unbelievable. So and then Terraport came out with the token factory. So that's kind of like where all that came to life. And then from there on, we're like, well, okay, so now we got the food token. How can we send money to farmers? So I was like, well, everybody's talking about tax, you know, tax this, tax that. Like, let's add a farmer's tax. So I talked to Frag, and then we got to working on code, you know, and he came up with this awesome code that he could tack on to new tokens that you can incorporate a tax. So that tax now collects on every transaction on buys and sells, and it goes directly to the wallet. We've even grabbed some. I contributed a 20,000 FRG. So we've been contributing some of our income to farming. So we're actually growing those funds as well. So we have a portion that we're sending out, and we have a portion that we're growing. And then, you know, on every transaction, those numbers are growing as well. So, but yeah, like the idea was let's use this blockchain of the people, and let's reach the people. Let's reach countries that are usually, you know, unreachable, and let's make an impact in people's communities, because we can't change the world, you know, from one day to the other. It has to be done on a micro level, you know, and that's kind of like what I'm doing. And I'm showing, and I'm educating my own community here in Canada. It's like, we want to take back ownership of our country. You have to take back your power to grow food. It's that simple. Because when you grow food and you have your own home, or you can build your own home, or you have a place that you can call your own, then what else do you need? It's like, what? Like, I can feed myself. I have a house. I don't need anything else. I'm good. Right? So, and that power will be reacquired, like I said, not through a multinational or big ass farms and stuff. No, it's like, there's a place down the road here you know, it's like 30 minutes down the road. I'm like, why would I deliver 30 minutes to somebody's house over there when you can have a farmer that's, you know, that lives 30 minutes down the road over there and that could produce for his community? So, and then we've tacked on, you know, different concepts and stuff, but that's the idea, is we want to be an educational center here for Quebec, for Canada, you know, and I'm replicating what I'm doing here at a small scale on a macro scale with Luna Classic. You know, I'm going to implant farmers in different countries that are going to be leaders and coaches and, you know, I call them permaculture ninjas. And they'll be growing food and restoring life and nature around us, because that's the idea, right? Is these concepts, you know, not only do they bring you an unbelievable amount of abundance, is that like it's good for all the life that surrounds it as well. You know, I usually tell clients that come in my gardens in the summer, I'm like, look at this ecosystem. You know, it's got stuff growing everywhere. You got flowers and herbs and vegetables and fruits, and you know, everything's kind of intercropped, so it just looks like a one ginormous jungle, right? But you have so much life. You have all these bugs, all these insects. We see like snakes every day, you know, birds, and but they're all part of this ecosystem. They established a balance. You know, they some of these insects or animals are predatory to some, you know, and some pest insects that you don't want to have in your garden. So it's just a different approach to gardening, to farming, that you're saying, instead of destroying nature, let's work with it, you know, let's share with it. And it'll be that much more abundant when you do it, because you realize that you can never control nature, and we're never going to win. You know, we are the only living species on the whole planet that doesn't live in collaboration with the rest of the living creatures. You know, think about it, insects, fruits, vegetables, we're talking about plants, trees, animals, whatever, birds, they live in this beautiful like synergy, and that like they can communicate and live together and do all this stuff. And then you have like humans who are like the virus of the planet, destroying everything, you know. We had this conversation with one of my interns this week, and saying, if humans were truly the apex, like animal, or the apex, you know, living creature of the planet, it wouldn't need to destroy its planet to live. It would make it better. It would better its environment, because you know you're so apex that you're intelligent enough not to destroy what you have. So that's what we got to work towards, right? Like, let's stop being like just like. Like this industrial revolution mindset, like we're just like we're the kings, we're the leaders. We like every life matters, and like that starts with, you know, we talk about humans, but we talk about like nature as well. But like every life matters. Like I feel like, you know, when you look around the media and stuff, you see people attributing more value to someone's life depending on the amount of money they got and this like that. Dude, every life matters just as much, you know, and that's what this farming stuff teaches you. Like, it's the best wisdom you can have, to have your hands in the dirt and working and sweating and doing all this stuff and teaching you patience. Like, how long do you guys know how long it takes to grow a tomato, just for fun? You know, we grab them at the grocery store and stuff, but like, how long do you guys think it takes to grow a tomato?
From seed, I would say about 120 days.
Big tomatoes is 180 days. That's half a freaking year, guys. You know, like there's so much shit that can happen from the moment you plant that seed.
Real tomatoes take 180 days.
Yeah.
You know, I think agriculture, I think in the agriculture industry, it's like half that time frame.
Yeah, it depends. You know, they've grown a bunch of strains of tomatoes, like cherry tomatoes and stuff like that. These early tomatoes, I know, like they have these Alaskan tomatoes for like shorter winter, you know, colder weather tomatoes that grow a little faster, but we don't get like the really, really big ones unless you have a full 180 days of growth. Mm-hmm. You know, but it just goes to show you that, like, you know, great things take time, and when you give it what it needs, nature will reward you with abundance. And abundance is like, it's hard to explain. Like sometimes we have so many cherry tomatoes, we don't even know what to do with it. So like, we don't care that the birds come and eat 5% of the cherry tomatoes, because in exchange, they eat all these predatory and all these problematic insects and pests in our gardens. So it's an exchange of energy, of life, of it's like I said, it's just living in the synergy. It's so beautiful. It's so rewarding and enriching and like, yeah, just something we're not used to, but it's like, it helps you slow down. It helps you live in the moment, you know, be there. And, you know, when you're gardening, you're not doing anything else. So we've gotten so out of touch with like such important things, you know, like growing food. Like it's the most basic thing, like to feed yourself, to house yourself, to clothe yourself, to reproduce. Like it's the most basic needs of a human. Yet, like we're not taught that at school. You know, how are we not all taught to grow our own food? Like it should be, like, why don't we not all have cooking class? You know,
I was talking to Ness. We were talking to Ness earlier while you were trying to get your things straightened out earlier this morning. But I had this weird feeling that this project was going to open a whole can of worms. And I'm glad that Ness and Jerry brought it up to my attention about the food token project. You know, along with other members as well. So I do want to give a shout out to Naja, who gave me the heads up on it. The other thing is that, what was it? What do you call it? We were talking about governments and the political system. Yeah. And it's not so much as like, it really depends on. I always prefer, like you said earlier, I always like to try to start. It's always more ideal that people don't give enough credit that you start at the local level, and everybody has a tendency. Too many people quite often start at the federal national level, which is way in over everybody's head. I mean, that is just, it's just too far, too much bureaucracy to deal with. And because like schools where I grew up, particularly here in my state. Like we do learn these types of topics where how do we grow our foods? Like I've grown a carrot and a potato. So I wonder, cause like the fact that you said that, I start to wonder, like not all school systems are the same or are created equal. And you're absolutely right that, you know, you do have to start at the local level. And here's the other thing that I was wondering, you know, there are different lobbying groups. Because I mean, you're going to, I start to speculate. And I started wondering this last night, just out of the blue. And I couldn't sleep because my brain was going down a rabbit hole. You know, that, you know, just this, and this may be a loaded thing to say, but I wonder if this project could solve a whole host of problems. Not to say that it's a one size fits all. Like, I mean, that's a game that's bad.
Just say, yeah. Say yeah. What you want to say, because I'm going to tell you.
I'm very careful because it's like, it's loaded. It's super loaded.
But we're here to change the world, nothing less. Like, we've got.
No, absolutely.
We're not here to talk. We're here to execute. We got solutions. Like, like I said, my vegetable garden, bro, it's half an acre and I'm producing tens of thousands of pounds of food with it. It's nuts. Like, you don't need to have 100 acres. You need to have a couple and just go, start, try it. You'll see. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And
Canada, I learned this a few days ago that Canada has a milk cartel, and that's just one problem.
Many cartels. It's unbelievable how much corruption.
Yeah. And I, yeah. And I, you know, one of the biggest issues that we've had here in the U.S. that we faced that was a much more controversial company was Monsanto with the GMO. So like our Monsanto is the cartel, the United is the agriculture cartel to that of the cartels that you guys have to deal with there. And I'm wondering, like, okay, if the United States and the Canada has them, like, you know, and then we're talking about the European countries now. I mean, I would say, I mean, Africa doesn't have, to my knowledge, doesn't have any like big food industry, or at least, I mean, I'm sure they do. I just don't know of them, of any, or what their behaviors have been like for the past couple of decades. You know, like at some point
with Africa and some of these countries is they don't have the ability to grow their food. So they need to sell their valuable resources to rich countries to have access to food. So a country like Africa will benefit so much from a concept like this, because if you give a country the ability to grow their own food, you're giving them the ability to grow. When they have their stomach filled, then they can think, they can plan, they can you know, build their country up. They don't have to sell their resources. They can exploit them themselves and keep the wealth into that country. You know, that's the problem, is when you sell your gold mines and diamond mines to Americans and English and the French and all these people, they come, they grab your resources, they pay you guys shit salary, and then they just grab all the resources out of your country and they make a buck. And, you know, you have one or two people in along the way that gets a stupid amount of money, and everybody else stays poor. And that's not a mindset or a life that we want to be living anymore. And this is kind of like what this blockchain is incorporating. Like we're trying to be the currency of the people. Then we got to be able to walk together before we can run together. And what best to bond and to get to know each other than to grow food and to put food on the table for people. You know, you think about like the most important times in history. You know, we remember them like the Last Supper. You know, all these like important events, they all have something in common, that people are eating food and they're sharing food and they're having good times, and it's just like it brings memories and it brings all this stuff. It like food is so basic, yet farmers is the profession that is the least valued in my eyes. Like these guys, they keep us alive. Like even all these politicians, all these doctors, everybody else, like, you know, fantastic. You know, we really appreciate what you guys do. But if you don't have a farmer, your ass wouldn't eat. That's that simple.
Real quick. Ness, can you, while Nick is talking, interrupt. Can you pull up Food Tokens Telegram and nest it? I can't seem to find it for some odd reason. So, because we have some people that are asking.
We're on the FRG ecosystem now. We are in the FRG ecosystem.
Okay.
FRG kind of, we started with Lung Zombie. I don't know if you guys heard.
That's an interesting fit. Like, how did that work out? Like, how did food and zombie? Like, exactly. I'm wondering, like.
I'm going to tell you. It's a great story. That's a bunch of stories. I can talk all day shit.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So FRG was my buddy Tom and stuff. I started a global marketing team, like, a year ago or something like that. And because I thought we needed to create a team that was marketing Luna Classic around the clock, you know, and that's like distributing a unified message, but like adapted to everybody's, you know, local community, the way they speak, the memes they use, you know, the message they spread. It just needs to be, you know, it needed to be adjusted to those communities. So that was the idea behind the global marketing team. But it's how I got to meet Tom, and I got to meet Hussey, and I got to meet Jacob. And then from there, we actually got together because we all wanted to build a video game. So yeah. Jacob wanted a shooter game. Tom wanted a car game. I wanted a farming game. And Hussey wanted a soccer game. So we got together and we're like, well, shit, if we come together, all four of us, we can finance the first game together. And then it'll just bring the funds necessary to build the second game and third game and fourth game. And next thing you know, we'll have all four of our games. So that's how it started. So we got on Lung Zombies, which is, we're in beta phase, beta testing right now. Garuda just updated their platform, so we lost the contact with our game there. Yeah, that's why it's called beta. You know, we're still working out some kinks and stuff, and we knew that the upgrade could potentially like hinder our game for there for a second. But so yeah, and from there on was born Lung Candy, right? Which was the meme coin for FRG. And then I was like, well, I think it would be nice to find a way to fund farmers and stuff like that. And that's where food came along. And then how we build in the burn, you know, I was looking at Cremation Coin, actually. They're the ones who gave me the idea, because they were grabbing 4% per transaction. I was like, that's a little bit hefty, but, you know, if you were to grab like one and you create this fund for farmers, I was like, that could work. And I bet you people would get into this ideology. So food, on top of being just, you know, the currency that we're going to send to farmers, is actually going to be used in the farming game as well. And we're actually coming out as well. I know you guys like NFT projects. Well, we got an NFT project coming out soon here called the Arcology Permaculture Project.
So that's Jerry's territory, not mine. He's more in tune with the NFT communities than I am.
But we want to give 12 permaculture courses like with this NFT project, right? So it's like an NFT project that actually has real utility, where we teach farming, we teach our concept, we teach like all the ins and outs and the business model part of it. And you know, we do microgreen production. Okay. Microgreen production, guys, if you're here listening, it's a glitch. Okay. And microgreens contain 9 to 60 times the nutrients of their fully grown counterparts, and they grow in 7 days. So like a place like us, where in the winter it's -40 outside, you can grow it inside at just your regular living room temperature, and they take 7 days to grow, and they're very low cost to make, and they retail for a very, very high price. So we got about 300-400% markup on microgreen sales, and we're cheap. We're priced very cheap. So compared to what it should be priced at. So that's the way our small farm runs, right? We have abundance of food in the summer with the hugelkultur gardens. And then we have the chickens. The chickens give us eggs every day, but they also there are little composting machines. So twice a year we get an excavator into their chicken coop and stuff, and we just scoop up everything. So every time it gets a little muddy, we just add more hay on top of the muddy poopy ground. And so it doesn't smell, but it also starts the composting process. So when we throw the compost in the pile, it's already almost a year old. So we're able to use it the year after that into our garden. So we've actually eliminated a direct cost of farming just by having chickens and by harvesting, you know, what we have from them, right? So we don't need water, we don't need compost, and we have 2 yearly revenues, which is microgreens and chickens. And then you have your garden that, you know, provides you with an abundance of food during the summer. And, you know, when you get good at like canning, this is what we're going to get good at this year, like canning, transforming, lacto fermentation. So all this stuff, right? Like you get better and you realize that, like, you know, how, you know, we buy marinara sauce every week. We buy all this stuff that we buy every week at the store. We don't need to be buying it. You know, we can be making it ourselves. And it, at first it doesn't seem like much. Like, oh, it only costs $7. It's like, yeah, but you buy one every week. So 7 times 52, that's like $300-something a year. And then that's just for marinara. And then you have the salsa, and then you have this, and you have that. And all of a sudden you're saving thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year, you know? And I always tell people, it's like, not just that. When you're buying food at the store, you're buying food and they're taxing you on it. But that's already taxed money. How crazy is that, right? Like, you work, you've been taxed on this money, and then you go to the store, you buy food, and you get taxed on it again. So if you grow your own food, not only do you not pay that food, you don't have to work that money to pay that food. You get it? So now you have more time for yourself. You can do more.
Another thing to consider too with that is the quality of your homegrown food compared to what you're going to get in the store is incomparable.
Incomparable. Not only that, the amount of nutrients in there versus, you know, you grab a red tomato at the store, or a lot of these vegetables are picked green, and then they'll become red as they're in the trucks and on their way to the store and stuff. So what happens, you know, it's nature is simple. That's what I love about nature. Okay. So if your tomato spends more time on the plant, it has more time to, you know, get nutrients, to get sugars, and to get water, and to get tastier. So that's why, like, some of these vegetables we're eating taste like water. It tastes like nothing, because they've been harvested too early. They don't have, they're not nutrient. They don't have a lot of nutrients in them, you know? So to be able to grow your food like that, like, your food is your medicine. I know you go to Asia, you go to India, you go to some of these places, like, food is almost, it's sacred. The stuff you put in your body is so important, because it can heal you or it can poison you, you know? And this food that we're growing here, and, you know, by doing it the right way, it heals your soul, because you're doing good, and you're growing good food, and you're just like at peace. But you're also healing your body, because you're eating food that's extremely nutrient dense. And an electroculture, okay, this is one of my 7 concepts in my research little book that I have there for our group. boosts harvest 200 to 300%. Okay, hugelkultur already does that about 200 to 300%. So if you add electroculture, you boost your gardening, you know, anywhere from 400 to 500%. But electroculture, they've done some tests. They ran some tests. This was discovered in like 1920, 1930s, you know, in the Tesla years, you know, where you had all these great thinkers and these people promising to give you like free electricity for everybody. And multinationals didn't like that, right? They didn't like that. They didn't want that. So they had him killed. They stole his inventions and they made it into multi-million dollar businesses. You know, you're finding parts and washing machines and stuff like that. It's like you just add magnets to it and you pretty much got a perpetual energy machine. And I'm actually working on that right now. That's the story for another day. But until then, so electroculture, they did tests on the food. Not only was it 200 to 300% bigger, it was 30 to 40% more nutrient dense. So it wasn't just big, it was more, that is more nutritional value to them on top of being enormous. So this is what I'm saying. We're here to bring real solutions. We're here to spread the message. We're here to grow some food in everywhere in the world. And that's what we want. We need farmers that want to get into this, and Food Token will gladly finance them. It's just, it's that simple. That money is there to be given to farmers who want to make a difference in their community.
Now, how are you implementing electroculture? I've heard of it can be just as simple as putting a copper rod in the ground.
Yep.
And during, yep, you know, like storms, for instance, there tends to be more electromagnetic activity, and you'll wake up the next day and you'll have, you know, a ton of cucumbers on the plant near the copper, whereas the plants where there is no copper, you know, they won't overperform in those situations. But again, how are you implementing that?
Well, exactly that. So the most simple, basic way you can do it is you grab a copper wire and you wrap it around a stick, you know, a stick, and you plant it into the ground. So you have one end going into the ground and the other end going up. So that's the most basic concept you can do.
Just pulling electricity out of the atmosphere. Think about that, everyone. It's just sitting there waiting for you to use it.
It's been there. It's been there for years. Look at buildings, like old school buildings in historic England and stuff. The roof are made of copper. They have a ball at the top. Guess what's in the ball? It's mercury. Do you know mercury can hold an electric charge? So you have something that can harvest electricity from the air, copper, and then you have mercury that can store energy, and then they would bring this energy into marble. So they would store energy in these big rocks, right? You heat a rock, it'll irrigate energy for hours and hours on end. So they were able to create free energy with that. It's like, it's not new technology. It's just like electricity is life. We are electromagnetic creatures. We, you know, the planet Earth has a magnetic circle. We spin around each other, but there's also one that goes from north to south. So everything that's circular, you follow energy, follow the energy of the world, right? Because when you spin from left to right and from top to bottom, it makes a circle over time. So everything that's circular is extremely energetic. And that's why all our gardens are made in circles. You know, it also keeps deers away and stuff like that. We're able to create olfactory barriers by putting really, really stinky, smelly stuff all around our garden. So deers don't even want to come close to it. We have no tracks, no deer tracks whatsoever anywhere close to our garden. And I literally live next to a national park. There's deers everywhere.
So two things that you just reminded me of. Like, one was that you can grow, and I was looking into this a few days ago. What was it? Like, lima beans have a natural pesticide, which is crazy. And I don't want to say it doesn't. If implemented with this mound approach agriculture technique. I don't think this mound requires you to do any kind of crop rotation, to my understanding, right?
No, not at all. So let me tell you about the three sisters. You ever heard of the three sisters?
I want to say yes, but it's so vague. I'm gonna go with no.
Okay. So how many? I'm sure all of you guys have seen, you know, fields of monoculture, right? Like where you just see cornfields just like lined up like in a row. Well, right. after 2 to 3 years of growing corn in a row like this, your soil is depleted of nitrogen completely because corn pulls an enormous amount of nitrogen. So they have to replant either like a clover or any other like a nitrogen fixer, you know, so they intercrop that for a year or two so they can rebuild up the soil and then let that stuff die and then they can replant corn. Well, permaculture suggests that, you know, the reason this monoculture stuff, you have to do that is because you're growing one thing. So the three sisters is a three vegetable concept. Okay. You have corn, you have beans. Okay. So your beans, they are your nitrogen fixers. So you can even have climbing beans that'll string onto the corn and they'll climb. So on your corn stalks, you'll have a bunch of beans that are growing on them. And the third one is squash. So what the squash will do is you see a cornfield, you have all this unused space between the corns, right? You have all this like this space that has sun, and you have all these animals that can live in there and stuff like that. Well, by growing squash, they use up all that empty space. So they just run because squash are runner plants, right? So you plant them, they'll run everywhere there's light. You know, they'll go between every one of those plants. So it looks like you're growing a jungle, but the squash also give an area so snakes and insects and stuff are protected from, you know, getting too eaten by birds and bugs and stuff like that. So and it also prevents evaporation from your soil because your sun can't reach your soil because there's just plants everywhere. So you're creating this natural condensation effect. Once you're done harvesting your corn and, you know, the season's over, you just chop your beans plant and you let it decompose right there in the ground. You throw some hay on top of it and next year it'll be dirt. But the beans, they bring back all the nitrogen the corn has pulled. So you're literally, you're not pulling or destroying anything. You're just, it's just, you can do this for thousands of years on out. You can just do this every year and it's going to work. And you're going to have a lot of harvest. So
it was that's a lot of information. I mean, something to add to your, this is just a thought. Cause I know your website is still in progress. Like you're adding more content to it. Is that something that you can add to your website? Cause it makes no mention of that.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, yeah, like, I mean, absolutely. You know, like maybe your website could not only just talk about the token itself, but really how anyone can get involved, agriculture techniques related. I was talking with Ness earlier this week. Ness has got me so fascinated, you know, with you as well. I mean, like, because I live in the state of Texas and all we have here is land. And you know, much like your African partners out there who are, and I saw the videos too. I'll mess them here for anybody who wants to check them out momentarily. Oh, and real quick, the Telegram is nested with the website. So if you take some time to go visit the website, you can check out the Telegram links. So there you go. But anyways, there's so much content. There's so much content or talking points. Like it's hard for anybody to know where to start. But it also feels like I'm back in a sandbox, you know, playing in the dirt.
But try it. Why not? What do you got to lose? Yeah. Right? So here's another trick. So it wasn't the same situation in Uganda, but here in Canada and a lot of places in the United States as well, excavation companies have to pay to get rid of wood.
Right.
Okay. So we've following our vegetable gardens, you know, it was working so well. I was like, well, I like fruits. I want fruits. So I was like, I'm going to plant some fruits. So I bought prune trees, pear trees, apple trees, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, goji berries, all these crazy, crazy fruit trees. And I planted them on these hugelkultur mounds. I'm like, I was trying to find some research on fruit trees growing on a hugelkultur mound and I couldn't find any. I was like, well, I'll be the first one to try it. So so I planted that in the spring. The trees have grown extremely well. They've pretty much 100% of them have survived winter, which is very unusual for new trees. Usually that you have, 10 to 20% loss.
Right.
And we've lost absolutely none of them. And my theory on that is that the logs that we bury at the bottom, they act as a thermal mass. So, you know, they say don't pile up a pile of compost more than 9 feet because it can spontaneously combust. And that's not a joke because it gets hot as hell in there.
Wow.
So that decomposing wood is creating some heat that's keeping the roots from freezing or dying over winter. So that's my mindset. That's my thought process with that. But that being said, those trees are doing very good. And in a couple of years, we were going to have a crap load of food over there. But we had hundreds and hundreds of trucks bring us wood. And I did not pay for any single one of them because they have to pay to get rid of it. So they'll bring it to your house for free. Like, and they'll be happy. It's like a win-win situation for everybody. So it's your food. It's your garden for the next 25 years. So that's, if you want to start, that's a good way to start. Once you have this mound, you'll be surprised. You know, we've had some community members that went along and did it too. Our buddy Jacob, medicinal, who's in the United States as well. He decided to make his little agriculture mound. You know, he got a shovel and he got working, he got digging, and he made his little agriculture mound himself, you know? And that's one other thing in this concept is it's not expensive. You know, even if you want to do it on a larger scale, you know, your only cost is like an excavator for the day to dig holes, you know, and then you fill it up with wood and then you call the excavator again to put the dirt back on top of your wood. And you're good for 25 years. You don't need an irrigation system. You don't need all this fancy stuff. You don't need to do all this tilling. You don't need machinery. You don't need tractors. You don't need shit. You just need a little arm juice. Get in there, plant some seeds, and then just go harvest your food. It's that simple.
And this, I want to be careful how I ask this question because it almost sounds like I don't want to come off like it's a one size fits all, but it almost.
Yeah, but it is.
Okay. I'm just like, I want to make sure it comes out of your mouth, not mine. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, no, but it is. But it depends on the resources you have available in your country.
Right.
Okay. We have a lot of wood here, you know, and for Uganda, he had to pay $150 to get a truck of wood. And it's 200 logs that he's going to be getting for his garden. So the first part of his financing was to pay for wood. You know, some other countries, you know, they may have a lot of palm leaves and stuff like that, which you can use for your root stout method. You know, we're talking about the topsoil recovery. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of using hay or wood chip or whatever, if you guys have a lot of palm leaves, that can work too. You know, whatever you need to make it nice and dense and to keep the sun from having access to your soil, you want to just create that. And then over time, these things decompose and they bring back nutrients into your soil. They feed your soil.
Right.
So that's the idea. And it is the one thing fits all because these things, as long as you have wood, what you're doing is you're creating your food for the next 25 years. You're digging a hole and you're putting it in there. By putting it in the ground, it's harvesting all the humidity that's in the ground. You know, from the rain, even if there's no rain, there's still humidity into the ground just because of condensation.
So this is applicable to like desert-like environments?
You know, the Cotonou, Africa was a pretty, pretty hot place.
How dry is it though?
Oh, pretty dry. I think there's actually seasons that he was saying they can't really grow so much. But he was sending me pictures of his garden. He forgot the root stout method. So I was like, that's crucial especially in his case, because it gets so hot and dry and so sunny that like, if you don't put a topsoil cover, like I said, once again, hay, wood chip and or straw, your soil is evaporating and like you go to monoculture field, right? It's just, it's dirt and it looks like sand. You kick it, you're probably going to have a cloud of dust, you know, like you go to my garden and you just move the hay. The dirt is wet, and once again, dig, right? And when it starts raining, well, all your topsoil compost goes into the ground all through their channels. So they do all your till work for you. So you don't have to do no till work. You don't have to do none of that stuff. None of the traditional, please don't bring blades and go through turning your soil and do all this stuff. Don't ever do that. That's like, it's actually a lie that modern agriculture has taught us that you need to do that. By doing that, you're killing everything. You're killing all the life into your soil. You're killing all the microorganisms. You're killing all the mycorrhizae. You're killing all the insects. It's not good.
So,
good about this concept is you're excavating and you're putting the dirt on the side. You just put it next to your hole, and then you put it back on. So you don't have a really like a a strong impact on the environment and the microbial life that's in the soil. You're just taking dirt and you're moving it aside and you're putting it back on top. So
yeah. So plowing, so you don't necessarily need to plow the field.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Here's like, if you really want to do something cool, you can, and you have a good excavator guy, he could take all your grass and kind of put it to the bottom, throw back. So that's pretty neat. So you throw your logs and then you throw your grass on top and then you put your dirt back on, just so you don't have any grass or other stuff that can compete with, you know, whatever you want to plant. And when you had your roots out method, like weeds from growing as well.
Hey, Nick.
So all just, you got to do,
Nick,
when
if you can
plant,
hear
like,
me,
like,
just
yep.
Nick, just real quick. I think, I don't know. Ness, can we do a mic check on him, or is he rugging?
Hello.
He was cutting out a little bit. I think you got a worse dose of it than I did, but he was cutting out a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you're moving around, I'm just wondering, like, is it me? Because I'm pretty much still.
No, I tend to move around. I have a hard time standing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's probably why you're cutting in and out. So I just want to like make that clear. It's like, yeah, we're losing a lot of important information here.
Yeah. So anyways, all in all, like we're here to better this community. We're here to bring a humane touch to crypto. We're here to grow this blockchain. At the end of the day, you know, the more we support each other, the more we encourage each other, the more Luna Classic grows. And when Luna Classic grows, all these layer two projects grow. Like we were talking about this, Tom and I the other day, Tom Holmes, the owner of FRG with Hussey. You know, when Luna Classic goes up, so does all our liquidity pools. You know, when you have strong liquidity pools, you can have bigger traders that come in and that put a little bit more money. Or you can also, you know, take a little bit out and use it to create new projects and grow. So this is why, you know, we have to be able to support each other and encourage each other. But to do that, we got to be able to trust each other. And I think to have like a humanitarian token like this that you know, coaches food, you know, we're here for the right reasons. And we're here to kind of like bring people together as well, and that's exactly what we're gonna do. I'm not a guy that just talks about it. I am about it. I'm doing things, and when I stopped playing football, I needed something that was just as stimulating. And even as an athlete, you work 7 days out of 7. You're training. If you're not training or in a game or in a practice, you're taking care of your body. You're doing recovery. You're doing all this stuff. So I was already used to this, you know, 365 days out of year lifestyle. So, and that's something, you know, we're going to talk about in our courses too, is that, you know, this thing's a marathon. And it's the same thing for Luna Classic, right? Like life is a marathon. You need to take it, you know, sometimes you got to sprint a little bit. Sometimes you got to slow down and jog and is the way it is. So it's important to keep your energies, you know, to have a steady, you're better off to have a steady, you know, 92% than to have like 110 and then like a 20%. And, you know, it's always better just to be constant and to have energy and to live, because that's the goal of life, right? Like we're here to live. We're here to have fun. We're here to learn. And I've learned so much since I became a farmer. Like I knew nothing about construction. I built my own production barn with wood I cut down myself. We got a sawmill guy to come here and he sawed all their wood and then we started building from scratch. And after that, we got on to building other project. Right now we're building a big greenhouse. I can do mechanics now. So I'm learning all these cool talents, man, that I didn't even know I could do. And it's kind of like what this world wants us to be, just one thing, right? Like I'm a lawyer, I'm this, I'm that. Like, why can't you be like plenty of things? Why can't you be 10 things? Like, that's what I'm going to be. My name is Nick Boulay and I grow things. That's how I'm going to introduce myself. I don't have a job title. I just grow things. I grow things. I grow food. I grow communities. I grow things. I have ideas and I put them into execution. And we're growing mushrooms now. You know, like that's even part of our ecosystem. I learned how to grow mushrooms and how to incorporate them into our gardens and their benefits and how beneficial they are for our health and for the ecosystem and everything else and that, you know, that they do for us. Like the mushrooms, mycorrhizae are like the Wi-Fi of nature. It's freaking unbelievable. Okay. So trees can talk to each other. Okay. They can send each other messages like, hey, there's a, you know, there's bugs that's over here eating our leaves. So like an oak tree can raise the toxicity of its leaves. So it becomes unedible, but he can send a message to his like baby oak trees, you know, that's growing around them. And tell them to raise their toxicity of their leaves, so they just become unedible to all the bugs in the area. With the mushrooms, you're able to expand that signal up to a kilometer. It's fantastic. So birds will bring seeds like everywhere, right? So you'll have a bunch of baby trees that will like that sometimes can be like really really far away from the mother tree, but they can communicate with each other through the mycelial system. They can even send each other like energy and nutrients and stuff like that. So it's like it's almost like a blockchain. The mycelium is almost like a blockchain where you can, they're like the intermediary to this beautiful world, right? And you can do all these things. So they're worth learning about because it's quite fascinating what they can do for us. And everywhere you see grass, there's mycelium, there's mushrooms under your feet. It's everywhere. It's literally everywhere. And the genetic code of a mushroom, like think about it, like, you know, plants and stuff, they die back every year. You know, some of them are perennial, but like a mushroom can live for thousands of years. A mushroom can take a rock and turn it into sugar. A mushroom is pretty much the basics of life. You know, they found mushrooms on Mars. You know, if you have water and you have sugar, you can have microorganisms live. You can have the beginning of creation. You can have evolution. You can have all this stuff. So when you eat mushrooms, you're eating something that has a genetic baggage that dates back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So it's that's why it's so good for us. And that's why, you know, they're saying if you eat mushrooms, it was a couple times a week, 2 to 3 times a week, it's supposed to expand your life 20 to 30%. It was something stupid like that. Like you guys can do your own research on it, but it's some of these mushrooms, especially we talk about shiitake mushroom. We talk about a turkey tail mushroom, the lion's mane mushroom. They make you smarter. Not even kidding. They help recreate connections between your brain. And for Alzheimer's patients, it reverses the effects of Alzheimer's. It's one of the only things in the world that can actually reverse Alzheimer's. So, and once again, do your own research on this, but like a pharmaceutical company cannot put a patent on a fruit or a vegetable or something. It has to be the mix of a couple nutrients. So like for say in broccoli microgreens, there's an enzyme called sulforaphane, which is an anti-cancer fighting properties enzyme that's in broccoli. Well, in the microgreen, you find it 60 times more concentrated. You know, a pharmaceutical couldn't just sell broccoli microgreen and say, you know, this is my product. They have to take the sulforaphane and then add another thing to it. And then they call it like cancerosol. Take this and you'll feel better, you know. But like the reality is your food is your real medicine. You know, you eat good food, stuff with a lot of nutrients, then you won't be sick because your body, you're giving your body the ability to heal itself by providing it with more than enough nutrients. And the human body is a fighting machine. Like we fight off over 2 million bacteria, fungal infections, mold, all these things. You're in contact with it all day long. Your body fights it all off. You know, we don't even know because, you know, we're not attentive to these kinds of things. You know, you don't even realize it because your body does it without even knowing. But you're fighting millions, millions, and millions of bacteria every single day. And the more your body fights these bacteria, the stronger your genetic code gets, right? The more you're able to adapt to other sicknesses and stuff like that. So once again, the more good food you give to your body, the more your genetic code can be reinforced and can be made even stronger. So that's the idea behind this ideology. It all starts with food, growing your own food. So that's why we're here. We're going to grow a shitload of food everywhere in the world. And I appreciate you guys giving me the platform to be able to communicate my project.
We're definitely going to have to bring you back because there's a lot of things that we wanted to touch. But we, I mean, we're already, I'd say you get, I mean, we started off on a late start, but all good. We'll hammer it out. But I mean, this conversation is getting, it's got so many different ways that we can take, but possibly if there might be a potential roundtable, I'd like to bring you on with everyone. Let's talk about this after this episode. How does that sound, Nicholas? Do you got like 5 more minutes?
Okay. I can talk every week.
I
can talk all day, like I told you. I got a bunch of stuff. We're going to be cloning fruit trees here in the next couple of days. I bought some rooting powder, and I can even talk to you about that. I got a bunch of cool ideas and concepts. I knew nothing about this, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I'm so stimulated. I love what I do because I'm learning every day. It's awesome.
No, that's...
I'm just getting out of my comfort zone, and I'm scared, terrified every day to do these things. I'm like, I don't know how to do. And I get extremely frustrated, but at the end of the day, bro, I go to sleep and I have a big smile on my face and I'm happy because you're doing good. You're doing good things, right? You're doing good things. Like, everybody needs food. Everybody's happy to have good food. So
that's awesome.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ness, do you got any last words?
There's a lot we could touch upon, but we've already gone so long that I don't think it's a good idea to get into another subject. Again, we can have you back, Nicholas, and maybe talk about some of this stuff, but we tend to try not to go over an hour, and I think with our preamble to this, we're at about 90 minutes, so.
Yeah, no worries.
Some flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, no, I got you. All right, so for anyone tuning in, want to say thank you, and to the community members that have contributed to Nick's project. Really excited to what you guys are putting out there into the space and spreading the message. Looking forward to seeing this continued growth for this project. You see what I did there? Growth. Okay. Bad pun.
Exactly.
Bad pun. But definitely want to get you connected with other influencers, not just through Luna Classic, but through other spaces as well. I do wonder at some point, if cross-chain is something to be considered in the near future, but you know, that'll be another subject. And for everybody else, happy Easter, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting nodders. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape him under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send them
messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats. And if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works. And we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We raping under the earth, sitting wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Channel Spaces.